Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey everyone, Scott Hansen here from NFL Red Zone. I hope you're checking out 1 hour of 5 Yard Rush, one of the best podcasts on NFL football in the UK.
Yo, what's happening, Rush Nation? We're back and it is a Tuesday. We're recording this on a sunny Monday evening, but as the podcast dropped this morning, we're going to give you one Tuesday. Rich is going to be there Wednesday. Ash and I will be back Thursday. It's almost a 5-day week this week. That's because the draft is coming and it is coming fast. Big man, we're back. I would love to say we're back in the studio. These days are not far away. How you doing, man? Happy Easter weekend.
Finally saw some human beings this weekend.
Real boy.
Yeah, I know. Unbelievable. I thought humans were just pixelated images on screens, but apparently people exist outside of my front door. How funny. I saw actual people that I know. It was weird. I went for a walk in Polesden, saw a guy I used to live with. So that was good fun with his kids. So it was just nice to see humans and interact. And we'll have to get together and do something soon. Mm-hmm. And hopefully we'll be in the studio. Be great to have it in the next 6-8 weeks. We'll see what happens, but yeah, it's and as you say, the draft's coming thick and fast. I think we're what, 24 days away now. 24 days I think sounds about right, from when the draft will start. I'm looking forward to it starting and ending, and knowing I enjoy it. Don't you know, I really love the draft. I love the draft a lot. I get engrossed in it, what teams we're gonna have at the end of it. So yeah, it's all good, and it means no more mock drafts after the next 3 or 4 weeks as well, which is only a good thing, I suppose.
Well, you say that, but you mean mock drafts proper, because then fantasy mock drafts will happen, and it's a continuation of the mock draft theme, because then rookies will have their landing spots and we'll go about picking, seeing who goes where, and rookie ADP will come into factor, and then dynasties will have their rookie drafts and Devy drafts will happen. And then eventually, somewhere along the line, there'll be startup dynasties that hopefully we can sort of stay away from this year. And then
they'll be going on. Oh God, I've been invited to and I've turned down so many.
I don't get it. I'm not a fan of drafting before the NFL draft proper.
Well, the idea is you do the rookie draft after.
Yeah, no, but I meant like in before free agency and stuff. And it's just a shot in the dark at some of those players at that point.
Yeah, it is. Look, it's people have a need to do it. I've done some best ball drafts. I have done a Devy draft, and I did a startup, and that was it. And that's all I'm doing this year for Dynasty. We've got Dynasty rookie draft. I'm not interested in doing any more dynasties. You know, typically people are overexcited, and these dynasties tend to die within 2 or 3 years. So I'm just not really sure I'm going to invest too much more in Dynasty. I love Dynasty, love format and everything, but I don't think I'm going to invest too many more Dynasty leagues. I think I'm just going to keep the ones I've got. And some of them are going into year 3, year 4. Some of them are going into, I think I've got one that's year 5. And they're good. And then the ones I think will last the longest, we're going to keep going and go from there.
Yeah, I think the draft fatigue of last year was caught up with quite a few Dynasty leagues this year. And we've seen a lot of people either not use it as a dynasty or completely forget they've got sleeper, or just be too invested in leagues, and leagues have broke down because of it. And
oh yeah, absolutely. It's really been carnage, like just how people have just, like, leagues have just died. And they're just, you know, Dynasty is supposed to be a 12-month thing. Okay, mm-hmm. maybe you don't do much in the NFL playoffs, and maybe before free agency, that's the time you should be making moves. And you know, we were quite aggressive in teams that we co-own. I was aggressive in teams that I own in leagues that allowed us to be progressive or aggressive. I was in one league that didn't even roll over So it's like, I'm out. If we're not even going to roll league over and we're, you know, we're late March, what's the point?
Yeah.
It was in another that a quarter of the league was gone. And I was like, a quarter of the league's gone, so you can't trade with a quarter of the league. And we're not filling them. Like, they just hadn't, the spots just hadn't been a competitive advantage if you're a savvy player, because it's that pre free agency where you can get some really good moves if you're really switched on to what's going on. As well as also you got this period pre the draft. Now the prices of rookie picks just go and they rocket now, because everyone knows about the players. So everyone gets overexcited, and the price of buying picks now is so much more than what it was about the players. So if your league hasn't been that active during that period, there's no point. Like, you kind of, you've missed the window on so many things. And I just, this thought of playing, of Dynasty being a league where it's basically just a redraft league that you keep the same players, that, I mean, if that's what people want to do, that is fine. But that's not a Dynasty league. That's a, basically a full roster keeper league. That, and there's a difference. There's a massive difference between a Dynasty league. And I'm not saying people need to be super active and need to be constantly trading and pinging offers. You know, you might really like your team. You might really like your team. You might be the defending champions, or you're one piece away. You think you're going to get it in the draft. And you're probably really happy and think, I just don't need to do anything. And that is absolutely fine. But when you haven't got a league where it's even full, and it's like, you can't trade, you can't make pieces, that's not a Dynasty league. That is just, it's just a keeper league.
I think
it's just been a big thing. And I think people did last year during lockdown, just as you said, drafted a load of teams, thought this is fun. And commissioners and players just are finding it a bit full on and thought, nah, absolutely fine. But, you know, for me, it's, I've just basically tuned out. I've left a few leagues because of, that's not what a Dynasty league is. It's not what I kind of for. And
yeah, I think what happened is Dynasty and redraft are so different in in them games themselves, that when people started to play Dynasty from redraft, they brought that mentality with them. And that's fair enough. If you've never played Dynasty, it is a completely different beast. But the lack of knowledge about keeper leagues is something that maybe we should expand into to bridge that gap, so that if you do want to play keeper, sort of full roster or half roster keeper, and you're not sure about Dynasty, but Dynasty is the only way that you can essentially do that, if that makes sense. Maybe that's something we need to not educate people, because that sounds like really up ourselves, but maybe provide more information on keeper leagues for people who are thinking, well, actually, maybe Dynasty isn't for me, but I don't know what else to do.
If you set out what it is at the start, you know, I think that's the key. And I think Dynasty leagues, for the most part, unless you know everyone, it probably needs some form of constitution. They probably need some form of document that displays kind of what this is. And it needs a commissioner to take control. And listen, everybody needs time out away from it. And I'm not, you know, we have a listener league Dynasty where I was a little slow doing the draft lottery that we agreed. You know, people make mistakes. The thing is not, you know, you're a bit slow on the uptake, or, you know, you're struggling to get people in. It's just having the commissioner is at least responding, is active, is at least like trying to either do something, or has gone, do you know what? My bad. I dropped the ball, but I'm on it now and get it sorted. And listen, I was that commissioner in one of our leagues. I was just a bit delayed on getting something done, and it happens. And making a mistake is fine. As long as you own up to it, you say, look, I dropped the ball, but I'm doing it now. We sorted it, and we've sorted it. Plenty of time for the draft. People know the order. People can pick, you know, in the same way that also having, you know, you've got to allow for the free agents. I get you might shut it after the draft. I get you might shut it until free agency. And this is where I think you need some form of either constitution, or your commissioner just needs to be really on it. I opened up all of our leagues that were Dynasty that I control or that we co-control, and opened them up to free agency bidding after a few days of the free agency deadline. So people didn't get an immediate steal. It was like, so-and-so just signed, you could just buy them immediately with no opportunity for the league to review. You know, you've got to open the free agency pool. People have got to either trim down their rosters, or there might be someone who is on waivers that people might want to pick up. You know, and you've got to allow a little bit of that. So I think that, yeah, maybe there is a bit of an education piece, or I don't know. I think the thing is decide kind of what you want. If you league, then do a dynasty league. If you're not and you really want that break between January and June, with the exception of maybe rookie picks, do a keeper league. Just do a full keeper league with a rookie draft. And that's okay. Like, you can literally design the league as you want. But the big thing is just advertise what it is. Be really clear. Put a constitution in place and do this. And, like, if it's not what you signed up to, it is okay to leave, as long as you leave with plenty of time, with plenty of notice, and you offer to help fill the spot. In every league I've been in, with the exception of one, because the commissioner just stopped responding to messages. I was like, well, if the commissioner isn't bothered, why should I be? And why should I invest help, you know? And I'll still, if the commissioner wants to reach out and help me, you know, he says to me, look, can you help me fill the spot? I absolutely will. But more often than not, in any league I've left, I'm like, look, I'll help you fill it. Or most of the time, I've even got a replacement myself and said, look, I'm going to leave. This person's taking over the team. Because the kind of league it is, it's just not what I thought it was. Mm. And it's not, it was kind of explained to me when we joined. And so, because I'm just not, like, I'm not a big keeper guy. I do one keeper league, and that's with Simo in the BFFL. That's it. That's the only keeper league I play. It's just not a format I'm a big fan of, but that one's a bit different. But I either play Dynasty or I play Redraft. But if it's just a seasonal keeper league, that's fine. I'll stick to Redraft. It's just more fun.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that makes sense. And you hit a good point there in fact that, you know, if you want to play in something, that's fine. And if you don't want to play in something, that's also fine. If it isn't what you thought it was, or perhaps you've decided that you are in too many leagues and you want out. There's no shame in leaving something that is essentially a Sunday afternoon hobby. I mean, I know that's exactly a very simple way of putting it, but for us, you know, we set our lineups for mostly Sunday at 6 p.m. and then we fire on Red Zone and off fantasy football goes. And yeah, there's no shame if you don't want to play anymore or if you're in too many leagues. I mean, it's the same as feeling a bit ashamed to ask on groups and stuff, like, are there any leagues or anything? Because there's plenty of leagues out there, and just don't be scared to go and join them if you're not in many and want to join more, or if you're in too many to leave. It's that simple, I think.
And I think for me, and I write a chapter in the playbook this year about being in too many, and the solution to this, spoiler alert, is best ball. You know, a lot of people just like the draft, just want to draft.
Yep.
Do a best ball league. Like, just do a best ball league, because you can do as many of those as you want, and there's no consequences. Do you know what? You draft badly in the best ball league, doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
Literally, as soon as the draft is ended, you don't have to do a thing. Brilliant. Like, that is what best ball is all about. Best ball is about just having a bit of fun. You do the draft. There's no management. There's no rosters. There's no waivers. It's literally you do the draft, and that is your team, and it will pick automatically the best lineup every week for 17 or 16 weeks or however you set up. Job done. Like, that is how you get around being in too many leagues. If you think, excuse me, if you want to draft and you want to be involved and have a bit of fantasy football chat, but you're not ready to commit to a full league, best ball leagues. You know what? If you wanted anybody on here, I will literally do as many best ball leagues as anybody wants. And people go, I don't know how to host them. I don't know where to host them. Reach out to me if you've got one person, three people, five people. I don't care. If you go, do you know what, Murph? I really want to do a best ball league. Don't know how to do it. Can you run one for me? I go, yeah, sure. Because it really is. It's like a little bit of investment at the beginning to set it up. And then once you hit the draft button, that is pretty much it. You draft and you're done. So if you don't know how to do a best ball league, hit me up at Murph_NFL. If you want me to host one, I'll host one. If you want me to host five, I'll host five. I don't really care. Like, it's fine. I'll do as many as people want. If that is going to help this plethora of vacant orphan leagues or orphan teams that are being left because people feel like get excited and want to do something, but don't want to commit to a team full time.
Perfect. There you are, Rush Nation. Murph is all about setting up them best ball leagues to keep you drafting when perhaps that's the only bit you really, really enjoy. We talked about rookie picks being expensive coming up to this time of the year. We're about to talk about a rookie in six players' time that outshone his rookie pick ADP by a long, long way. We've done tight ends, we've done running backs, we've done quarterbacks. It's time for wide receiver consistency from the 2020 season. 24, top 24, you know, wide receiver ones, wide receiver twos. Murph, I imagine Rush Nation can see the screen about now if Lee's done his thing from behind the glass. I imagine you have, Lee, because there you go. It's in my ear. He has. I knew you had. I was just checking. What I can see from this straight off the gate, Murph, is that there's a lot of red on the board. And I think is there more red here than in the running back section, or are my eyes deceiving me?
Yeah. So let's set the frame here and explain a lot of this, because yeah, it's going to look like, oh, you shouldn't invest in wide receivers, and far from the case. Now, listen, when it comes to consistency with how I've done consistency, it's very different to how the fantasy footballers do consistency. It's very different to Belong in the consistency guide that does consistency. You can draw the metrics wherever you like into what is considered consistent and what is not consistent. What I have done with every position, and that highlights more in the wide receiver position, and I'll get to why in a second, is looked at the standard fantasy football roster. So that's one QB, two running back, two wide receiver, one tight end, one flex, right? And that's what I've done. So effectively, what I want to know when I'm analyzing players, when I'm thinking about next year, tools that I think that I use to look at players I want to draft, is I want to understand how many times that player performed at a top 24 level, because that's the starting level. If you're in the 12 team league and you play in a two wide receiver league, that's 24 wide receivers. Just ignore the flex, because yeah, you could say it's 30 or 36 or 28 or whatever. I'm thinking about those starting spots. And I'm thinking about you were going to start in that league 24 wide receivers as a minimum in your starting spots. Therefore, what I am interested in is how many times a player does not perform at a top 24 level. And that's where the bust level is set at. I took the average score of what a bust, basically the 24th score, and then basically anything below that was a bust. And what that will show in the wide receiver position more than any other, with the exception of maybe tight end because it's football, is a lot of red. And the reason it's a lot of red is because there's actually a lot more competition at that position than any other. If you think quarterback, there's one quarterback in the game, unless that quarterback gets benched or gets injured and then the backup comes in. But you've only got one quarterback. You only realistically have one running back starter. You might have a few offenses in the league that will run dual carries, split backfields, etc. But effectively, you have one major running back in 30 of the 32 NFL teams. And in the other teams, you're probably not that bothered because you're not playing that person as a starter in fantasy football. When it comes to wide receivers, typically, there's two or three wide receivers, and sometimes you can get really cute, and you can get four and five wide sets, depending on how, you know, formations line up. The typical average NFL formation will have anywhere between two and three wide receivers on the field at any one time. So there's a lot more competition, first of all, because you're not the only receiver on the field. And also, you're then also dealing with the running back and also the you know this better than anyone, Stocks. You've got to deal with the coverage. The main wide receiver, who tip called the alpha, will be the person who might go into double coverage. It depends on what the second wide receiver is like on that team. Someone like Michael Thomas will probably be double covered most of the time for the Saints because they're not too bothered about who the second wide receiver is on that team, because they're not going to be as good as Michael Thomas. So actually that also then affects impact. So what you're seeing on the screen here, is long story short, is a wide receiver is going to bust, you know, typically at least 30% of the time, if not a lot more. In fact, it's very common that wide receivers will bust 50% of the time. And you're seeing that even in the top 12 players. You know, only six of the top 12 didn't bust 50% of the time. And that's normal. That isn't a massive shock. That is what it is, because it is a very, very difficult. What to consider here is actually how many MVP games they have, and that's where they're finishing as a top, you know, a top three, top five wide receiver. And then, you know, where are they being really solid most weeks as well? And that's what's really key. So it's just important to understand the ones that are elevated and at the absolute top tier, and then the other ones that are just, you know, are real risk. The other thing to point out here before we get into this, and appreciate I've gone a bit of a explanation and exercise here, is of all the positions, with the exception of maybe quarterback this year, the ADP is relatively good. It says that fantasy experts and fantasy players alike are pretty good at understanding who the elite wide receivers are in the game. Eight of the players that finished in the top 24, you know, let me get this right. Basically, eight players all an ADP that was under 24. So that says to you that 16 players that finished in the top 24 had an ADP of the top 24. So it means that there was no real surprises from those players when they finished in the top 24, because that's what we predicted them to do. Mm-hmm. But what's really funny is only the top 24 that had an ADP outside of 40. And of those players, two of them were rookies. One was a sophomore player, and one was a player who moved to a new team. So it says again that fantasy analytics players alike are very good at analyzing wide receiver talent far more than probably any other position. So it means when you're looking at ADPs of wide receivers, they might be off by a few, but you're not going to get that many statistical outliers. And the ones that are, as we said, a couple of them are rookies, so anything can happen, as it did. One moved to a new team, and one was a second-year player who was in a really bad offense in his freshman year.
Yeah, and highlight the rookies you just brought up. You know, Rich did a really good piece about how often rookie picks actually hit in rookie drafts. How many of them become sort of top 12, top 24 at their position in their first season at fantasy, and it's like a 50% chance, basically. And when we look into the top 12 here, there's only one wide receiver, Justin Jefferson, at 6. And then you've got to go all the way down to 19 and 20, where Chase Claypool and CeeDee Lamb were 19 and 20. So that just shows you, of the people we drafted to be the number one receivers, your Jerry Judy's, CeeDee Lamb's, even Henry Ruggs at some certain places, Henry Ruggs, Judy, they're not here. And it's Justin Jefferson. So when it comes to rookie picks, it just shows that perhaps we get sucked in a bit too much by the draft process and the player before the draft, as opposed to landing spot. But
well, a little bit. I think you've picked two very different players there. So I guess to explain Jerry Judy was very unfortunate. You know, he's a player who he had an injury. His number one receiver on that team, Cortland Sutton, had an injury. So all of a sudden, Jerry Judy was the lead receiver on the team. And he wasn't allowed to be a rookie. Add into that the inconsistency of what was going on at the quarterback position. It was about as tough a year as it was going to be for Jerry Judy. You can sit there and make excuses, but basically Jerry Judy was not drafted to be the number one receiver in that team in his rookie year. And in fact, none of very well were the number one receiver on their team very early in the season. They might have ended up getting up there or getting an equal share, but Jerry Judy was in a very, very difficult spot, and he had no one on the other side that was helping him. really. And that was a difficult spot. So I wouldn't give up on Jerry Jeudy. I think he had a really difficult year, but I wouldn't say a lot of it was his fault. When it comes to Henry Ruggs, I mean, I don't know how many times I said that picking Henry Ruggs was just
because he's
not
fast,
a good idea.
Murph. He's because he's fast.
That means nothing.
I know.
I mean, yeah. I mean, listen, how many times do people have to fall for the fast wide receiver? I mean, how many? Yeah, John Ross. I mean, how many times do people in the NFL have to realize that speed isn't everything? It's highly important, but it's not everything. It's not the end all or be all of the entire position. So, I think, you know, this is what we're getting. Paris Campbell's really quick. He's not done anything really in the NFL as of yet. This is what you're looking at. So I just think for me, you know, Henry Ruggs was destined. He was overdrafted. I didn't have one single share of Henry Ruggs because I didn't believe in it at all. But Jerry Jeudy, I think someone's very different. But I think, you know, you looked at these players that went in the first round of rookie drafts last year. You had Jalen Reagor, CeeDee Lamb, Jerry Jeudy, Justin Jefferson, eyes in particular, and Henry Ruggs. They were kind of like the five, and Brandon Ayuk was the sixth. Those six wide receivers went in the first round last year. Four of those guys, absolutely very little qualms or concerns about what they did, even if they didn't have the most productive time in Jerry Jeudy. You saw enough on tape. Brandon Ayuk has massively displaced Deebo Samuel, and he's an easy buy low candidate this year. He's going to be electric when he gets a better quarterback. He had no quarterback throwing to him, and he was still a top guy last year. He's only just off these charts. You know, the two that you have question marks about were Ruggs and Reagor, and they were probably the two that were the biggest shocks of where they were taken on draft night.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I think I heard a mad stat about Adam Thielen the other day, and something like 30% of his fantasy points came from touchdowns or something last season.
Yeah, he had a very high touchdown rate, which elevated him massively to where he was, and there's a concern. However, what's interesting is that his ADP for this year has kind of already baked that in, and everyone is expecting that regression, and he's slipped massively down on 2021 ADP boards as it stands right now. And I find that fascinating because even though that was the case, and even though we know what happened, people just assume that Justin Jefferson has got all the work there locked up. And as a result, Adam Thielen is someone that you can pick up in the fourth round, maybe even the fifth round of drafts. And I think, you know what? I'm tempted to pick him up there. I think that's excellent value, considering that the Vikings don't have anyone else. it's not like Adam Thielen's going to be lacking for snaps or targets or anything else. So I wouldn't be too, you know, I don't think he's wide receiver eight as he is on the chart here. But, you know, if he was knocking around the bottom end of wide receiver one, top end of wide receiver two, would I be shocked? Absolutely not. I would be shocked if we were talking this 12 months from now and he was around this range.
And you'd be more than happy picking him up at where you picked him up, like round four-ish, because that's a steal to get a low one, high two.
Absolutely. And I think that's what you've got to look at. And this is why this data is fascinating when you look at it on paper, because, yeah, he does bust at a very high rate. However, you know, because, again, he was a bit touchdown or bust dependent. But when it comes to what the Vikings do, there are not many guys. There's not many guys that he's competing with for targets. And, you know, it just takes one injury or one setback for Justin Jefferson, and all of a sudden Thielen is locked into a 30-35% target share. And all of a sudden he could, you know, his range of outcomes could be anything if Justin Jefferson isn't enough. So I quite like Thielen. I think he's still for good value for where he's going. But we'll get into his numbers in more detail in just a second.
Yeah, so we'll start at the top. Obviously, Devontae Adams, everybody knows he was the absolute top dog last year at the wide receiver position, finished first. just shy of 301 points with 300.9 through 14 games. So he missed two games, as we all know. Averaged 21.5 fantasy points a game. He was the second wide receiver off the board behind Michael Thomas. Had six MVP weeks, five solid, and just three bust games.
Devontae Adams is actually, he started incredibly strong. In his opening, in the opening half of the season, he only played six times. He had four MVP weeks in those first six games and then two bust weeks. When he busted, he wasn't busting at a bad rate. It wasn't like he was putting up really low scores. He was putting up like 10s, 11s, which, you know, is a harsh to call that a bust, really. But given the context of, I wanted to see who it was, you know, the games he wasn't performing at a top 24 level, he was probably still performing in those bust weeks. I think two of them, I think he was still performing at a top 36 week, or around about that sort of number. I think he had one week that was an absolute stinker. So the consistency was remarkable. High powered offense, it did slow down. Only two MVP weeks in the second half of the season. He had all five of his solid weeks in that back half of the season as well. So I guess, we talked about Rodgers and we talked about there is definitely some baked-in regression coming that way. And I think there is going to be a little bit of regression coming Devontae Adams' way as well. However, given the fact that he only played 14 of the 16 games, he still put up over 300 points. He's the undisputed wide receiver one in fantasy football right now. And I don't think it's close.
Mm.
But what I will say, and I'm going to talk about this with Rich this week, is, and spoiler and teaser for the Dynasty show this week, if I was holding Devontae Adams in Dynasty, I'd probably sell.
Yeah.
But I'll let you tune into the episode to listen to why.
It will just be for me getting what I think is a decent value for him at this point in his career.
But you're never getting a better value. You're not going to get more. There's every chance that Devontae Adams does not finish as the wide receiver one in 2021. But it wouldn't shock me if he did. And he is the undisputed wide receiver one. I think he's a talented player. You know, he's also produced four top six. Let me pull the numbers. Is it top six or top 12? He's produced last 6 years. And in
how many
years he's four?
Four in the last six.
Four in the last 6 years. And in the years that he didn't do it were years he was injured. Sorry, I got that wrong. It's five of the last six. The only year he didn't do it was last year in 2019, where he finished 24th and he only played 11 games.
And that's still wide receiver two territory.
So led fantasy. So he was top scorer in 2018. He was top scorer in 2020. In 2017, he was ninth. In 2016, he was ninth. You know, you're talking about a highly consistent prospect, a highly consistent player.
Yep.
You know, two number one, two number nine finishes. And then missing out in 2019. So yeah, four of the last 5 years, five of the last six. Is just highly impressive.
Yeah, you're right. I think he is the wide receiver one. But again, it wouldn't surprise me, somebody like the next player, if he pips him, or even Stephon Diggs has got a chance, I think, if he has a nuclear season. But then he's got to have one hell of a season because of how the Bills run that offense. Number two, we've mentioned it. Well, we haven't. Number two is Tyreek Hill. He had 285.4 points. He only played 15 games, averaged 19 points, was the ADP, was the third wide receiver off the board. He had four MVP weeks. He did have seven solid weeks and then four bust weeks.
Yeah, Hill was just remarkably consistent throughout. He had two MVP weeks in the first half of the season, two in the second half of the season. He had five weeks in the middle there, five solid weeks in the first half of the season, just two in the second half of the season, and then two and two when splitting out his season. Now, I think before we go on, the player with the ADP one you mentioned was Michael Thomas. You know, Michael Thomas missed a lot of time for a number of different reasons last season, mostly injury. you know, Michael Thomas is an interesting one because he is effectively a buy low, but his is all dependent on who the quarterback is going to be in 2021. If it's Jameis Winston, you know, you can feel pretty confident what you're getting there. If they move for someone like Sam Darnold, you can feel pretty confident in him. If it's Taysom Hill, you'll be highly worried. And that risk is baked into his. That's why you're not hearing Michael Thomas. And, you know, it was his injuries that pushed him down. But Tyreek Hill, again, is another player who's been remarkably consistent when fit. But he has had disciplinary issues as well as also injury issues. He did finish third in 2018. You can see there last season he 30th, and again he missed time through injury. He was fourth in 2017, so you know this is his third top four finish in the last 4 years, which is again highly impressive and remarkably consistent. And you're not going to have too many worries about him being a top six player next year, and effectively that's what you're baking into your price. You're not just baking in, is this guy going to challenge for the wide receiver one, which he absolutely can, but you're baking into the fact that it's highly unlikely if he plays 15, 16 games. And the game he missed was he was sat out. He was rested. They'd secured the number one seed, and he was rested. He wasn't injured. He just was rested. So if he plays 15, 16 games, you can or top five wide receiver. So that's what you're buying the prices at. And you can't go wrong with him at the tail end of the first round. We've talked about this on this show. Adams and Hill at the back end of the first round, you can buy all day long and redraft in 2021 and feel pretty comfortable.
Mm-hmm. At number three, Stephon Diggs. He scored 265 points. He played all 16, averaging 16.6 a game. He was the 27th wide receiver. Is that ADP wide receiver or is that ADP?
ADP wide receiver.
So he was the 27th wide receiver.
Shocking. Wowzers. But this was because the fantasy industry, there's two reasons that price was baked in. One was a wide receiver moving to a new team. And I have said this time and time again, their production tends to always go down. We talked about this when Odell moved to Cleveland. I said I didn't want part of it year one. I wanted to see what he did. If the price fell to a fourth round pick, I'd probably have invested in Odell. He was going high second. It was too high for a player who, well, any player consistently when they move teams, it is a risk. It's a huge risk. The only player I felt more confident on was DeAndre Hopkins, who we'll get to. But Stephon Diggs was a player when he left Minnesota, was not coming off his best season, wasn't getting thrown the ball, and the fantasy community did not rate Josh Allen at all as a quarterback. They might like him in fantasy, but they did not rate what he could do. And yet you gave Josh Allen Stephon Diggs, and those two were phenomenal. Couple of points on Stephon Diggs. First of all, he had four bust weeks in the first eight games, and he had three in the first 4 weeks. So clearly, he just started very, very slow, taking time to, as is expected, to get on page with Josh Allen. But as it went on, he got much, much better, produced more solid weeks in the middle, had two MVP weeks in the second half of the season, compared to one in the first half of the season. And he put up big numbers. And more importantly, he put up a championship-winning performance in week 16, which is when one of those MVP weeks occurred.
Yeah. I made a big push for him championship week. I was trying to buy him everywhere because he was going to be the guy who's going to win me the chips. But yeah, I like Stephon Diggs going into next year, mainly because of the way he reacted after the championship game defeat, where he stood on the field and watched the celebrations of the Chiefs. You know, it takes a lot to go and do that after you've lost in what is possibly the biggest game of his career to date. So to stand there and watch the Chiefs get the trophy means Stephon Diggs is angry, and if Josh Allen can keep up or maintain a little bit of that form, and I think Stephon Diggs is going to have a better year, but by how much, I don't know. Number four, Calvin Ridley, 236.5 points through 15 games, averaged 15.8 a game, was the 17th wide receiver off the board, so again, an absolute steal there. Had four MVP weeks, seven solid weeks, and then just four bust weeks.
Yeah. Remarkably consistent first half to second half of the season were pretty much the same. Not much. This Falcons offense was not as good as it should have been in 2020. Calvin Ridley really intrigues me as a player. Listen, he's always someone who gets into the end zone. But for me, I'm not 100% sold that he is a number one receiver. I mean, listen, the numbers here look phenomenal. And you look at that and you think, wow, you know, what he did from yards and touchdowns and everything. But for me, Calvin Ridley is better when Julio Jones is on the field. And I think he is someone who needs that premier coverage. I'm not so sure that Calvin Ridley is a quote-unquote alpha. I think he did a good job, don't get me wrong, but I can't help but feel that he needs Julio on that field to be productive. That he needs somebody who's a threat, because the guy on the other side was Russell Gage, and Russell Gage isn't a bad receiver, but he's not phenomenal. You have question marks over who's going to be quarterback. We expect it to be Matt Ryan next year. So that new coach, new GM, what's Arthur Smith got cooking? Can he Calvin Ridley? For me, this is the first player that we're talking about where I'm not sure. I'm not sure at this cost if he's going off the board. I think he's better than ADP 17, but he's not someone I'm reaching for in the second round to get. He's not a must-own wide receiver for me, which I think you could argue with the first three that we've talked about and potentially the next three that we're going to talk about. Yeah, I think he's in that sandwich of someone that goes, if he fell to me at the right price, I'd very happily push the button, but I don't think he's a must-own on my team, which I think is different to, like I said, the three guys before him and the three guys we're going to talk about next.
You're right. Calvin Ridley is very chalk and cheese for me. I don't tend to own him in many places because of the fact I just think Julio is still the dog on that team. But then I appreciate what Ridley does. It's such a weird... I don't know why my aversion, but I don't really ever own him anywhere because I either get sniped picking him a bit later than I would, or I'm just a bit wary of his production. But I shouldn't be as much as I don't know. But
I had quite a bit of Calvin Ridley last year and was quite happy to own him. But I was getting him. I was getting him in the fifth round. If I missed out on Allen, I got Ridley, and if I missed out on Ridley, I got Allen. And this guy's panned out very, very nicely. And I think, you know, in the fourth round, I'd have no hesitation. At the third round, I think it would depend who's off the... but second round, absolutely not. And he's someone who, in that range, I know I'm not desperate to own. I'm just going to pull up draft data that I've been looking at and see where he's going off. This is terrible audio.
It's not great video, I imagine, either. Do a little dance. No. I'm not.
So yeah, he's going sort of top of the third in this mock draft data right now, which I'm looking at the players that you can get after him. These are some of the names you can get after him right now. Mike Evans, Michael Thomas, AJ Brown. I mean, Keenan Allen, Justin Jefferson are all going after him. I'd have all five of those guys before I bought Calvin Ridley. And that's not really a big snatch at Calvin Ridley. I think he needs an alpha receiver who's going to be fit to really unlock what he can do. And he is a bit of a touchdown or bust dependent player.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, at five, we've got Nuke Hopkins. He weighs in with 230 points, so only six less than Ridley. Played all 16, averaged 14.4, was the fifth wide receiver, so he was bang on, finished bang on where he was drafted to be. Had four MVP weeks, five solid weeks, and then eight bust weeks, but he started really, really hot.
Well, he didn't. He didn't start that hot. He kind of had one good game, then he busted a couple of times. The problem with him, first of all, again, he is arguably, for me, the best receiver in the game. From a ability and traits perspective, I think he's arguably the best receiver in the game. And I think what he gives you and what he's able to do, I think is phenomenal. And I think the fact that he finished in the top five, considering that he... move to a new team, which we talked about, is nothing short of remarkable. And, you know, for the last 4 years, he has been a top four wide receiver. So this is the lowest he's been in 4 years. I mean, that's not bad going at all for a player who, and, you know, he changed teams. He is someone who has consistently delivered. I would expect him to go up from here. I would have no problem taking him as the wide receiver 3 overall next year behind Adams and Hill. I'd have no problem at all. I know these numbers don't look overly optimistic. I think you do bake in that first year. It does take a bit of time to get that chemistry going. He did bust a lot, and that's understandable. There was no preseason. There was no off season. He didn't get time to work with Kyler Murray. He got traded, and then they got to work. So I expect them to be better, and expect them to be better when they've got another receiver. And I fully expect them either to get one in the draft or to sign one. Probably in the draft, I'd expect them to go and get a top weapon to play alongside Hopkins, because Christian Kirk isn't getting it done. So I think Hopkins would be better than this next year.
I completely agree. We get to number 6, who is the first rookie. Justin Jefferson pretty much scored exactly the same as Justin Jefferson, all bar 0.1 fantasy points. So he scored 230, again, played all 16 games, averaged 14.4, was the 49th wide receiver off the board. So there's your value. Had 4 MVP weeks, 4 solid weeks, and again, 8 bust weeks. And we're starting to get into that territory, Murph, where the bust weeks are coming thick and fast.
Yeah, and look, it's not, again, you're talking about a rookie. He, again, started particularly slow. He had 6 of his 8 bust weeks came in the first half of the season. He's learning the ropes. Again, no preseason, no offseason. It took him time to get going. That's normal. He had no solid week. He had no solid weeks in the first half of the season. That's why you're seeing what you're seeing. This second half of the season, he was unbelievable. He really put up some big numbers. A lot of it came in the types of games, and they were in a playoff race till near the end, and that massively helped them. But, you know, I think Justin Jefferson has proved he's as good a wide receiver as anybody, and you'd have no qualms taking him. You know, I wouldn't necessarily say, I'd say he'd be on the cusp of like wide receiver 5 to wide receiver 6 for me. I just think he's someone who has that ability to be, you know, if he finishes wide receiver 1 this year, would you be overly shocked? I don't think so. I think he's got room to go up from here. Whereas others I'm thinking about, well, everything would have to fall right for them to be around about where they are again next year. Justin Jefferson, I think, well, he's going to have a whole off-season and preseason, and he's already had some time in the system. I think he goes upwards from here. Same with DeAndre Hopkins. I think both of these guys are arrow up players for sure.
Interesting. Yeah, no, you're right. I had not seen this, so I hadn't really thought about it like that. Moving on, we've got DK Metcalf. He scored pretty much exactly the same again as Justin Jefferson, 229.8, played all 16, averaged 14.4 fantasy points per game, was the 23rd wide receiver off the board. So again, supreme value right there. Had 3 MVP weeks, 5 solid weeks, and again, 8 bust weeks.
I am slightly worried about DK Metcalf. I think he's going to be overdrafted this year. So I looked at DK Metcalf. I looked at his first half of the season versus the second half of the season, or the let Russ cook versus the let Russ go back to peeling potatoes. And basically, when it came down to it, that 6 of DK Metcalf's 8 bust weeks came in that second half of the season. So in the final 8 games of the season, you know, he busted 6 times. He had 1 solid game and 1 MVP game.
Yep. And I imagine the exact same thing can be said for Tyler Lockett as well.
Yeah, pretty much. In fact, exactly the same numbers for Tyler Lockett as well. So we know they're going to run the ball more. They've signed back Chris Carson. I'm not saying that these guys are not guys to get, but I'm worried about paying the premium.
And that's, you're right. I think, especially now with Tyler Lockett getting his new contract extension, people are going to be super excited about that. And I mean, for Tyler Lockett, that's obviously a superb move, but it's more of a football move than it is a fantasy football move.
Well, but their ADPs are quite a fair bit apart. So right now, DK Metcalf is going in the late second round. which is too high for me. I'm not invested in a redraft league. In a dynasty league, different story. Tyler Lockett is going in the sixth round.
Oh, well, then you take my money and run.
That's what I mean. Like, it, the price between the two of them is absolutely nuts. And I expect Tyler Lockett's price to rise, and I expect DK Metcalf's to fall slightly. But I think this is definitely an instance where you buy the cheaper one. Because I don't think the drop-off is that much. To either of them.
No. And I mean, when you can, I imagine Tyler Lockett's ADP has been, I think he's been abused ADP for every single season he's played football, I would imagine. He's finished, disregarding injury, I imagine he's finished ahead of his ADP every single season he's played, or at least the last few in recent memory, because of how many big bust, when he has a decent MVP game, Tyler Lockett can win you a week. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. I mean,
we sit here on the data here, right? So, you know, you've got it up on the screen here. Tyler Lockett's 9, so we might as well deal with the two of them at the same time. Their difference in average points per game is 0.9 points per game. And what is bringing it down is when Tyler Lockett is busting, he is badly. I mean, like, he had games that he had one game he had 0.1 points. I mean, it is literally as bad as it gets. That brings his, well, I mean, yeah, okay, zero or negative, but it's still pretty bad. But my point is that Tyler Lockett busts at a top 12, and that is a concern. But having said that, as you say, when he has a... My point is that there's not 4 rounds worth of ADP difference in these two. It's like 3.5, really, when you bake in the extra. But there's not that much difference between them. So I don't know why you would invest in DK Metcalf when you can buy Tyler Lockett 2 rounds, 3 rounds cheaper. And, okay, you're giving up half, 0.9 of a point per game. It's not a lot. It's just not a lot. It's just not enough to, you know, you can go and get someone better there. I DK Metcalf in Dynasty, I get it. He's young. He can only get better. In redraft, nah, give me the cheaper option. I'll take Tyler Lockett in the 5th, 6th round all day long and wouldn't hesitate to pull the trigger there.
So sandwiched in between those guys at 8, we mentioned him earlier, Adam Thielen, 217 fantasy points, 15 games played, averaged 14.5 fantasy points a week, was the 12th wide receiver off the board. He had 4 MVP weeks, 3 solid weeks, and then 8 bust weeks.
Yeah, I mean, weeks when Justin Jefferson wasn't a thing, and that's to be expected. When Justin Jefferson was more a thing, his MVP weeks turned into... solid weeks, and then he busts at the same rate as everybody else. I think he's a little touchdown dependent, but as I touched on his ADP, right now is 4th round. I'm investing at that price. I'm quite happy to do that. I think he's someone who is going to be, as I've said already, on the fringes of that wide receiver 1, wide receiver 2 conversation. And to get a player like that in the 4th round, yes, please. I think he's. I do think he's going to get a bit of regression potentially in the touchdown column, but I would expect him to get a bit more progression in some of the reception numbers this year.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about you can get Adam Thielen in the 4th and Tyler Lockett in the 6th, and I'm thinking, I know it's not sexy, but I would not hate having those two at a pinch if I got absolute stud running backs or Travis Kelce and another running back in the 3rd. I mean, if I could start those two as my wide receivers, I wouldn't be hugely disappointed.
No, you certainly wouldn't at all, would you? You'd be very happy. And again, Adam Thielen is a player who consistently has been finishing in the top 12 of fantasy rankings for wide receivers. He has done it time and time and time again. You know, he was 10th in 2017. He was 6th in 2018. 2019, he had an injury, so he finished way down in 62nd. But it's a guy who knows how to get there, and he's someone who is highly impressive.
Yeah, and he's also a guy who knows how to hit the end zone. I mean, there should be regression coming because he did have a fair few, but you go back 2 years ago, and I think he scored a touchdown, in the first 10 weeks, 9 weeks, something like that, he scored. Yeah. So, He definitely knows his way into the end zone. We'll move on to 10, fire the cannons, Murph. It's first Buccaneer. It's Mike Evans. He scored 213 points, played 16 games, averaged 13.4, was the ninth wide receiver off the board, so finished pretty much where he was drafted. Only had two MVP weeks, but had a solid eight games in the solid category, and then only six bust weeks.
Yeah, so the thing that's interesting here is no wide receiver had more solid weeks of any wide receiver than Mike Evans. And, you know, Mike Evans is a massively underappreciated asset. And I'm trying to not do this as a Buccaneers fan, but just purely from the analytics, okay? So let's start off with the things that people know, that Mike Evans has been in the league for seven seasons. All seven seasons, he's had 1,000 yards receiving. That is an NFL record. Mike Evans is consistently, his ADP always kind of that 9 to 12 range. He's had four of the last five seasons, he's been a top 12 fantasy wide receiver. So he's been highly productive. Mm-hmm. I don't think he is the player that gets you to number one. I don't think he's ever going to be a wide receiver one, because he's got someone like Chris Godwin on the other side. He might have Antonio Brown there, you know. He's going to have weeks where he doesn't perform. But he is the big red zone threat in that Buccaneers offense. He's going to score touchdowns. You can book Mike Evans, if healthy, for at least 10 touchdowns next year. And you wouldn't have a big argument about it. Like, he has, for me, arguably one of the safest floors. And you're talking about he was ninth in 2020. He was eighth in 2019. He was 10th in 2019. He was 10th in 2018. He just was outside the top 12 in 2017 and third in 2016. Mike Evans has done this with different coordinators. He's done it with different coaches. He's done it with three different quarterbacks. Like, it doesn't matter who is slinging the rock. It doesn't matter who is coaching or who is scheming. The guy ends up as a wide receiver one if he plays games. So for me, a massively underrated threat. He's not sexy because he's never going to be the overall wide receiver one. He's just not. But he is, outside of Tyreek Hill and Devontae Adams and DeAndre Hopkins, he's that fourth guy that I could, you know, if I was a gambling man, which I'm not, I'd feel pretty confident saying that he would be a wide receiver one at the end of the season.
Yeah, I mean, his previous history points to just that. You're right. So I think as a floor play, Mike Evans is an absolute odds on safe gamble every single season. Moving on to number 11, AJ Brown. I'm not sure on him this year, just because of what he's endured in the offseason and with Corey Davis moving and stuff. And he scored 212 points last year through 14 games, did average 15.2, which is significantly higher than those above him up until the fourth wide receiver. He was the 15th wide receiver off the board, so you got a little bit of value there. He only had two MVP weeks, but he had seven solid weeks, which is up there with the best of them, and then five bust weeks.
Yeah, I mean, AJ Brown has some differences. You mentioned Corey Davis has gone. Arthur Smith, his offensive coordinator, has gone. He has yet another offensive coordinator to deal with. I think at the end of the day, AJ Brown is fine. I think he's a good player. I think he's talent-wise well worthy of that top 12 spot. There is a little bit of spottiness and inconsistency there in terms of coaching and everything, but I think he's got a good rapport with his quarterback. As you say, only 14 games. If he plays the full 16, his average takes him to five, wide receiver five, yeah, if he maintains that average. So, again, that's quite critical. He's only down because he missed time and the guys above him didn't. So, I feel pretty good at where you can get AJ Brown in drafts now. You're getting him mid third. He's in that Michael Thomas, Mike Evans, AJ Brown, Calvin Ridley era. Like, that's the range. I'd have no problem taking Brown over Ridley. I think, you know, Thomas, Evans, Brown, you can kind of chop that any way you want to go. The risk tolerance with Michael Thomas is on who's throwing him the ball, but no doubt he's got the ability. Mike Evans is the floor play. AJ Brown is your upside play.
Yeah, I suppose at that point in the draft, it's almost what you've done before you as to how you want to build your roster. So you're right, they're all interchangeable as to who you pick at that point, depending on if you want to go safe or not. And then finally, the last wide receiver one is Allen Robinson. He scored 211 points, Played all 16, averaged 13.2, was the eighth wide receiver off the board, so dropped on his ADP value a little bit. Only had three MVP weeks, had four solid weeks, but had nine bust weeks.
Yeah, but his is all about who threw in the ball. I think the fact that Allen Robinson was a wide receiver one when he had Mitchell Trubisky and Nick Foles throwing the ball is probably one of the greatest career feats you'll ever see in fantasy football.
Do we think that that gets any better, though, with the red rifle now throwing in the football?
Yeah, I think Andy Dalton is more competent. I mean, you look at how many years Andy Dalton made AJ Green fantasy relevant. Quarterbacks get better with age. They don't get worse until they get to like 40, which Andy Dalton is not. I'm not saying Andy Dalton is an elite guy, but I think we can safely say he's better than Mitch Trubisky and Nick Foles, right? I think he is.
I'm fully aboard that train too.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's the quarterback play that's going to cap his upside. But I think, you know, Allen Robinson is a pretty safe pick. He is going, funny enough, Allen Robinson in the fourth round. So his range, he is going with. These are the wide receivers he's around. Adam Thielen, Kenny Golladay, Terry McLaurin, Allen Robinson, DJ Moore, Julio Jones. I mean, that's a great cluster of wide receivers to be with. I think outside of McLaurin, Robinson is probably the guy I'd want to own out of all them because of the floor play.
Yeah.
CeeDee Lamb's the other one that's in that range as well. And Amari Cooper.
Yeah. I love the way that this is looking for ADP right now. If you're wanting some of that fourth, fifth round wide receiver action, it's tasty.
Yeah. I mean, in the fifth round, you've got right now Juju Smith-Schuster, Robert Woods, Deontay Johnson. I mean, for fifth round guys, they're phenomenal.
Yeah.
So I mean, it's great. It's like great what you can get there. But I think Allen Robinson is very similar to Mike Evans for me. Safe floor, knows how to get it done. It's probably not going to be a wide receiver one, more due to who's throwing him the ball than anything. But if he's on the field, you can lock him in for a low end wide receiver one performance this year. And I don't think you have any people that would really doubt you. You know, he was 10th last year. He like I said, he just gets it done.
So that's the wide receiver ones covered off, Murph. We're rapidly approaching the 60-minute mark. Have you got any sort of thoughts on the next 12 guys? And if there's sort of the thirst from Rush Nation about another show regarding these next 12 guys, we could possibly do that going down the line. Or do you want to try and run through all 12 of these now?
I can give you some snaps of each. I think that would be better because I think there's some interesting nuggets. But I think, you know, we're going to get most of the same here. Start with Robert Woods, you know, instant QB upgrade. That's going to help massively. I still think his touchdown number for his targets is a little low. And I think you'll see some positive regression yet again. It's what I said last year. I still think there's a little bit more to be baked in there. So I think Robert Woods is a good buy, and he's still got a fifth round ADP. I think that's too good for where he is. Because he's always been a fringe or just in the wide receiver one conversation. Keenan Allen doesn't need any explanation. You know, he is as good a wide receiver as there is if healthy. He was an absolute steal last year going at wide receiver 20. And, you know, once he was partnered with Justin Herbert, he was electric, and we really saw the best of it. And what is bringing Keenan Allen's score down is the couple of games he had to play with Tyrod Taylor. if you think he had Justin Herbert there for those games, with the exception and not Tyrod Taylor, he would have done better. And he would have been a wide receiver one. And that's all you've got to know. Mm-hmm. Brandon Cooks, I mean, we don't really know what's going on with the Deshaun Watson situation. I'm not really going to comment on it. With Cooks, it's almost impossible insight to share there. Other than if he is the one and Deshaun Watson plays, which is probably unlikely, he could be good value. But again, he's going to have maybe Tyrod Taylor throwing him the ball. So no thanks. Now you got this cluster. I'm going to take Cooper. I'm going to take Cooper and CeeDee Lamb together. For me, like these guys still ended up as wide receiver twos. Mm-hmm. And they had Dalton throwing the ball, as you sort of mentioned, but there was more targets to go around there. That isn't the case in Chicago. But Andy Dalton did sustain two wide receiver twos. For me, Cooper, I think, is overpriced and CeeDee Lamb is underpriced. And they're pretty much back-to-back. I think Lamb, when partnered with Dak, as we saw in the early parts of the season, his one MVP or one of his MVP weeks came with Dak. I think is more important. I think Lamb has the upside, and I think he's got more ability than Cooper. And I think he's going to be on the team longer. So I think Cooper arrowed down for me. I think Lamb is Cooper up, but I'd be quite happy owning both. Marvin Jones is on a different team now. He's in Jacksonville. I'm a bit concerned. I don't think it's amazing. He's gone to play with Trevor Lawrence. I don't know how much work he's going to get out of Trevor Lawrence. They got DJ Chark. They'll probably draft a receiver. It's a pretty crowded room. You don't really know what's going to happen. Plus, you've got the rookie there. If he comes in at a good price, like he's wide receiver 36 here, if he's knocking on that sort of door again, I'd happily invest. But yeah, we'll see what happens. Then you've got the Pittsburgh three. Juju Smith-Schuster in 18th. Chase Claypool in 19th. Deontay Johnson in 23rd. These guys were split by 8 points, not even 7.8 points between the three of them. The way I would buy these players is Deontay Johnson, I'd buy first. He's actually the cheapest, I think. Deontay Johnson is going at the back end of the fifth. Juju Smith-Schuster is going before him. Actually, I think Claypool is the cheapest of the three. Deontay Johnson is the one who's going to get the most targets. He's going to get the most work of the three, I think, based on what we saw last year. And also, he was the only one that missed a game. So although he missed a game, he was only 7.8 points out. He would have been above both of those based on his average per game. I think there's room for Claypool to shine. I think Juju is the fade of the three. He's not the one I would want. But it's interesting that they have three wide receiver twos.
Yeah.
And they kind of cannibalize their own targets there, but interesting. But again, all solid plays. You can feel good about drafting any one of them if you get them at a good price. Terry McLaurin, I think under Fitzmagic, I think he's going to be terrific. And I think he's a huge arrow up guy. It wouldn't shock me to be a wide receiver one next year based on what he is. His ADP has got him in that fourth round. I think he's a huge upside guy. Some guys that are going before him that I would take McLaurin over Chris Godwin. And then you get like Keenan Allen. That's an interesting one. I'd probably either or. I think it's pretty good. Justin Jefferson is going to be pretty close. I'd have McLaurin over Golladay. I'd have McLaurin over Thielen. I think McLaurin is a very, very good player. I think his price is going to rise to a high third. Maybe even a second round pick. I think that lore of playing with Fitzmagic, I think is going to draw a lot of people in. So I think his upside goes through the roof. DJ Moore, I mean, he did well considering he had Teddy Bridgewater throwing him the rock.
Ouch.
We do expect a better QB there, but who is that QB? If it's a rookie, it could be anything. So who knows? And then Robbie Anderson's there as well. So Teddy did support two wide receiver twos in there. Anderson actually had the least amount of touchdowns per touch in the NFL last season and is due a massive positive regression in that touchdown column. So I think Anderson, with someone throwing him the ball, who can throw the ball at an average depth of target above seven, will benefit massively. And I think DJ Moore as well, now that Curtis Samuel has gone, I think both these guys will at least solidify their places in the top 24 wide receivers, but if not, they could arrow up slightly.
Yeah, I think that was a very good breakdown of the wide receiver twos there. I mean, there's some names, obviously, that it's going to shift around and stuff. And like you said, there's a few people here that could rapidly rise up, and there's some players here like Brandon Cooks who could vaporize given what we just don't know. So I think it's going to be a very interesting... Well, once the drafts happen, we'll have a bit more knowledge and stuff. But there's still a lot of stuff we don't know yet, which is exciting.
Yeah, listen, we still got rookies to come in, and this is a very good rookie class. You know, Jamar Chase could break into the top 24 depending on landing spot.
You know, not if he goes to the Bengals.
Well, I mean, anything could happen. You know, I would say right now there's a few very interesting things going on. If they don't take a Jamar Chase or anyone like that, I really like T. Higgins to jump up into the top 24 conversation. I think he's a huge buy low player based on what he did with Joe Burrow in the early parts of the season.
Yep.
Don't forget, you know, Ryan Finley was throwing him the ball in the second half of the season. So, you know, what's he supposed to do? I think he's a huge arrow up guy if they don't take a wide receiver early. I think, you know, you've got some of these other young wide receivers coming in. You know, Rondale Moore could potentially be interesting. You know, Devonta Smith. There's a load of guys here. This top 24 class, I mean, the wide receivers get better every year. What's coming in, it's going to be really tough to be a top 24 wide receiver in this league next season. I do think that there's some guys who we ran through that are arrow downs. I think Cooks, I think Cooper potentially, depends what happens with Dak. You know, I think Juju Smith-Schuster, yep. I think they're the three I look at now and think I don't feel confident. Maybe Robbie Anderson wouldn't shock me if he fell out, but I don't think he falls that far, but he could fall out of the conversation because he's on the edge. You know, I think there's a few guys here that could easily be replaced. You know, we haven't even talked about guys like Michael Thomas and Julio Jones who could potentially come back into top 24. I think wide receiver is as good as it's ever been in the NFL. It's good for fantasy players. It's good for fans. It's good for everyone. I think what you want to be doing here is starting to see where the tier gaps are, because, you know, we're grouping guys together and you can see they can be very, very similar. And you're seeing it on the screen with these stats, you know, averages 12.5, 12.8, 11.9, 11.9, 11.6, 11.5. These are very, very fine margins. And that's because it's quite a big tier of guys. So, you know, 16 to 24 on this list is a very wide tier that's separated by 1 point per game on average. It's not a lot.
Yep.
It's a really small margin. And that's okay. You know, if you miss, and, you know, if you ended up with Brandon Cooks over Amari Cooper last year, you didn't pay for it. That's absolutely fine. The thing is always making sure that you don't get a player that's outside of this range. So it's going to be a little bit tricky, but you really want to find high floor guys at the right price. So I think for me, having a Robinson or an Evans, who aren't going to be your MVP guys, but they're going to be quite solid, and then mixing in with trying to get a guy who could reach the ceiling could be massive.
Mm-hmm.
But as we saw with the running backs, they tail off very quickly. Wide receivers deep, which is why I think you're still going to hold that strategy of getting an elite running back as early as you can, and then solidify with wide receiver.
Yeah, I like it. I like
it. First two rounds and still be very, very happy.
Yeah, I think currently at the moment there's some serious value to be had in the sort of fifth to seventh round here, and I think that's it's definitely going to be explored coming up to draft season with people getting excited and doing mock drafts and actual fantasy drafts and redrafts early. And there's a whole lot going to be going on. So this information is pretty exciting, and it's going to be in the book, Murph. So
it is. It's all going to be there. It's all broken down in there. So with some further explanation and mixed in with some other things that we're doing as well.
Yeah. Happy days. Happy days. Well, big man, that's the end of the wide receiver consistency. That is going to wrap up today's show. Have I missed anything?
No, that's everything. It's I enjoy doing these. We can put 2020 in the books now. People should go back and listen to these shows, perhaps nearer the season when they're thinking about drafts, and go through these numbers.
Absolutely. Well, mate, this has been a blast as always. Enjoy your show with Rich. I'll enjoy editing it and then listening to it. Rush Nation, don't forget, we're going to be in your ears. Well, if you're listening on Tuesday, go back and listen to Monday. Listen to Tuesday, listen to Wednesday with Murph and Rich. Listen to Thursday with me and Ash. And that's four of the five. And then have a Friday off, maybe. I don't know. But hey, listen, there's a lot of football to come. Draft season is right around the corner. And as always, don't forget, keep rushing.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.